This is file 20, cycle 24. This is Jean McMillan. Today's date is August 22, 2019. I am interviewing David Bulmer, who is a math teacher at Hotchkiss School and grew up on Hotchkiss School. So he's going to tell us all about Hotchkiss School. But first we're going to start with, what is your name?
David Bulmer.
And I'm going to start with your dad, because he worked at Hotchkiss before you did.
Absolutely.
When did your father come to Hotchkiss?
Well, my father served in the Navy, finished college on the GI Bill, graduated in 47, mm-hmm. and came to Hotchkiss in the fall of 47, right out of college.
Wow.
And he worked there for 44 years until he retired in the spring of 1991.
And what did he teach?
He taught mathematics.
All kinds of mathematics.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
And wasn't he director of admissions for a while?
He was the director of admissions in the early 60s. I forget the exact dates, roughly 61 through 66. I sort of remember those years, but...
That's close enough.
Right.
You grew up on campus.
I grew up on campus.
Were you in a dorm?
There were three boys in my family. I'm the youngest. We lived in Beeler Dormitory when we were all born. And then in, I think it was 1958, we moved to a different dormitory, Van Sanford, which was brand new at that point, and lived there until 1961 when we moved into a house on the corner through 41 and 112.
I knew about the house. I wasn't sure about the dorms.
Right.
As you were growing up in a dorm, were there restrictions, places you couldn't go or times you couldn't be out or things like that?
No, not really. I mean, in the first dorm in Beeler, I was way too young to remember anything. I moved when I was three, so I was the baby, you know, that sort of thing. I do remember living in Van Sanford. At that time, the basement was just a big open basement, you know, concrete, laundry room, that sort of thing. But it was pretty big and open, and we would go down there in bad weather in the wintertime to play.
Mm-hmm, sure.
The attic, there was an attic where you could store boxes and things like that, and that's where our TV antenna was.
Yeah.
Inside the attic. So
right.
If the TV wasn't working terribly well, I remember you would sort of form a chain, because we were on the second floor, someone be near the TV, someone in the hallway, someone upstairs. You know, someone at, you know, turning the antenna.
Sure.
To get reception.
Yeah. Oh, I remember those things.
Absolutely. That's going back a few years. That was back in the 60s.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we moved into the house on the corner, which at the time was a brown shingle house.
I think I remember when it was brown.
Now it's a white house.
Yeah.
There used to be a big old tree in front, which was nice. That's gone. But my parents lived there for 30 years. So that was home growing up, and when I graduated and whatever, when I came back to teach, 1987 was my first year teaching at Hotchkiss, mm-hmm. As a math teacher, having taught elsewhere for 8 years.
We'll get there.
Right,
we'll
right,
get there.
I understand. But my father was still teaching, mm-hmm. and we taught together for 5 years. In fact, when I got hired, he was the head of the math department. And the head of school at that time, Arthur White, was a former math teacher who also had three boys. There were three boys in my family, three boys in that family, and we grew up together, went to Hotchkiss together. And he'd been a math teacher when he first got to Hotchkiss in the mid to late 50s, I think. And then become dean of students and different things, and eventually became head of school.
Uh-huh.
He retired.
When you were living... As a child at Hotchkiss, did you have free range of the athletic facilities?
The athletic facilities, because basically what I remember, because back then, you know, coming back from Salisbury Central, the bus would drop us off right near our house, and we'd run inside and change or drop off our books or get a snack, and then we'd run off to football practice, soccer practice, basketball, baseball, depending upon the season.
Okay, so there wasn't
and
any...
We would go hang out. I mean, again, back then, you know, there wasn't the way it is now, where kids really don't seem to be able to go anywhere without parents going with them or being, you know...
But it was all boys at that point.
The school was all boys until...
74,
75. Yep. So the class of 75 was the first year with girls there. So when I was there as a student, it was all boys, and when I was growing up, it was all boys. And so it was very different. There's no question about it. Meals were all sit-down, three meals a day. From Sunday dinner until Saturday lunch, you were assigned a table. One teacher and, I think it was 11 students? 10, 11,
That's
12 students?
Right.
Something like that on the big tables. And each teacher was assigned a table, and they were expected to be there breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So one of the things I remember growing up would be times when I would see my father at breakfast one morning, and the next time I would see him would be breakfast the next day. So that, because when I came back from school, he'd be off working, coaching or something like that, and then he would have, let's say, study hall, dorm duty, something like, and then, you know, since I was going to bed at 8 o'clock or whatever it was, he would come home after I'd already gone to bed. But that wasn't terribly unusual at that time.
When you were going to the dining room for sit-down meals, was there a dress code?
Oh, absolutely. Everything was coat and tie for boys.
Okay.
You had to wear a coat and tie. Now, faculty children were not allowed to go to the dining room until they were about 11 years old, or Sunday dinner, if you were, I forget how old, 9 or something, you could go. Because usually there would be kids on weekends who wouldn't come back, so there would be empty seats. Because otherwise, all the seats were taken all the time, so there just wasn't room.
Well, if you couldn't go to the dining room until you were 11, then your mother had to feed you at home.
We ate at home. Though there were times when mom would go to meals. And so what happened, she would feed us early, let's say 5:15. And then there were different, like, faculty children who were older who would come and sort of babysit with us. So mom would feed us, and then, you know, the other... The girl would come babysit with us.
Make sure you were okay.
So the mom could, you know, go over to have dinner sometimes. Didn't have right off, but at times.
It happened.
Yeah. But we would go to, you know, every Saturday night there was a movie or a play or something in the old auditorium. And we would often go to those. I mean, once we were older, not when I was 6, but
yeah,
you know,
sure.
When you're 9, 10, 11, 12, that sort of thing, before
I
got old enough to actually go to Hotchkiss, so that would happen. And spent a lot of time at games, you know, went to the gym.
Well, you were an athlete anyway, so...
Well, I was an athlete. I wasn't a very good athlete, but I enjoyed playing sports.
Yeah, but so that would be where you put your time in.
Right,
absolutely.
So we spent time in the afternoon. I mean, I remember for baseball practice, we'd go in the outfield and shag balls during batting practice.
Sure.
So the kids, the baseball team didn't, you know, they were happy to have us do that, so we would, you know, that's how we learned to play outfield, I guess, if you will.
Sure.
And I still remember going down to track. I don't think they do it anymore, but in the old days you used to have the hammer throw.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which is basically like a big cannonball from the Civil War days with a chain and a handle, and they would throw it. So it's heavy and dangerous. And, you know, they wouldn't let us nowadays. But back then I remember, you know, being 10, 11, you'd stand off to the side, they'd throw the hammer, and then we would run out and then sort of drag it back.
Sure.
Not quite strong enough to kind of pick it up, but we would drag it back.
Yeah.
Nowadays, of course, you wouldn't be let within, you know, a mile and a half or something like that, because they'd be worried that we would run out and try to catch it or something stupid like that. But, you know, or I remember growing up in the summertime or vacations, we would just go play in the woods.
Oh, sure.
Because back then, yeah, there were ticks, but there really was no Lyme disease. The only thing that was really bad in the woods was poison ivy. Which we got once in
a while. Yeah, but you could identify that pretty well.
Well, unfortunately, when you're playing and you're running around, and you don't realize until afterwards, like, oops, I must have been poisoned by me. But,
yeah.
I mean, the kids, we would go out, and we had a dog for about 2 years, but we would go out and just play. And so after breakfast or sometime, we'd make a lunch, and we'd go off and play in the woods and, you know, be back in time for dinner.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was the way it was.
You know, you couldn't do that nowadays. Parents would never let kids go off on their own to play in the woods and do things like that. Or I remember, you know, when we got older, we would ride a bike. Even times we'd ride a bike here and go up to Lion's Head.
Mm-hmm.
Or go up to, you know, up the road to Ragger or something.
Not now.
On our own as kids.
Now, you attended Salisbury Central for the first 6
grade? I went to Salisbury Central through 6th grade.
Right.
Both my older brothers went there too.
Oh, good.
Oh, yes. It's kind of funny. I remember there was one year, I think it was 5th grade. I was the third son. Third Bowman would go to Salisbury Central. And I think at my time, my dad was actually on the Board of Education. Mm-hmm. And one time they sent home my report card, they had my name spelled wrong.
Oh, Lord.
They spelled Bowman wrong. It's kind of like, oh, come on, I'm the third one. I'm not the first. But, I mean, it's just sort of funny.
Well, sure.
Because everything was handwritten back then, of course, back in the 60s. You know?
I know. I was teaching in the 60s.
Yes, people rush and that sort of thing. So I do remember that. But yeah, that was through sixth grade. And, you know, we would go in the morning and our bus happened to get there a little bit early. So we would go out and play kickball mm-hmm. before school would start. Mm-hmm. But our bus home was usually the first one to leave.
Yeah, it would
so
be.
So right after school, we would get on the bus and head back home. And the bus basically went from Salisbury Central around the lake over towards Milton, you know, did a U-turn, and then came back around the lake. And that was the whole...
That was the whole trip.
That was the whole trip for that particular bus. I mean, obviously other buses had to go a lot further, but for us, that was our short ride.
Now, you went to Indian Mountain for 8th grade.
I went to Indian Mountain for 8th grade, yes, for 1 year.
Who was the head at that time?
The head at the time was Bill Doolittle.
Okay.
And that was... He was near retirement. I don't remember when he actually retired, but he'd been there for a long time.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I was there in, 68, 69 was my 8th grade year at Indian Mountain. And it was a good change. I mean, nothing against Salisbury Central or other public school I went to for 1 year, but I don't remember doing a whole lot of work. I wasn't a genius or anything, but I did fine. I did the work, yeah. You know, did well. But Indian Mountain forced us to do more work.
Yeah, and in more of a structured variety.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had to write papers for English and history, and, mm-hmm. you know, I was taking French. Monsieur Benny's, I don't know why I still remember his name, but it was sort of a joke. I mean, it wasn't very good, but then when I went to Hotchkiss, took French, sort of advanced first-year French.
Uh-oh.
You know, it wasn't beginning, but it wasn't ready for second year. So
yeah.
It was fine. It was where I fit in, I guess. But, Indian Mountain was good, and I was an athlete there. I played quarterback in the football team because I was about the only kid who could throw the ball,
mm-hmm.
and I was tall. Mm-hmm. But basically our offense was, you know, hand the ball off to this one running back, you know, Curtis to the right, Curtis to the left, Curtis up the middle. And if we had to, I would throw sometimes. So, but it was fun. I mean, you know, we weren't big enough to hurt each other.
And you didn't have all of the padding, and you weren't 300 pounds or anything.
Oh, no. I was about 6 feet tall, but I was about 140 pounds.
Okay.
So tall and skinny. And then in the wintertime at Indian Mountain, you had two choices. You either did downhill skiing, or you played ice hockey. And that was it. There was no there was a gym, but the gym was set up for auditorium, all the chairs. So there was no basketball or anything. So since I could skate, taught myself to skate. Well, not taught. We taught ourselves to skate at Hotchkiss over the years when we were growing up. So I played ice hockey. Because in the old days, the hockey rink at Hotchkiss was an outdoor rink,
mm-hmm.
which most places were. And back then, it was fine.
Yeah.
So all the kids at Hotchkiss had to go to dinner at 6 o'clock. So we would often have dinner and then race over to the hockey rink, and they had this one light at the end. And we would just skate.
Sure.
Taught ourselves. And in the beginning, it was how many times could you fall? It was almost more than how long could you stand up.
And you improved.
But I remember going out there, and the fun thought, like when it would snow, you'd get these shovels and you'd make paths on the ice and the snow and you skate around. And, you know, we didn't play much ice hockey, but we had tennis balls and stuff and throw them around. So, you know, I still remember at times we'd be there and my hands would be so cold I couldn't take my skates off. So I'd have to walk home with
those little
plastic
guards. Oh, the rubber things on the skates.
No, plastic like that. Okay. The plastic guards and stuff. But, you know, that's just, that sort of thing, you know, went on at school back then.
Oh, sure. Now, when you attended Hotchkiss, I'm going to ask you, who did you have for chemistry?
Okay, chemistry was my junior year, mm-hmm. 11th grade year. I had Neil Scott.
Okay, and how about geometry?
Geometry was my lower mid second year. That was Art Eddy.
And English was Bob Hawkins?
Well, as a ninth grader, I had Bob Hawkins for English and George Kellogg for general science.
Who did you have for Spanish?
I had George Anastasio. Oh dear, he taught me first year Spanish, I think.
Okay.
Because when I was at Hotchkiss, In fact, my brother was a year ahead of me. The rule used to be you had to take Latin and another language. Mm-hmm. So Latin and French, Latin and Spanish, German, Russian. So my brother was 1 year ahead of me. He had to take Latin.
Yeah.
But they changed the rule for my particular grade. So we had to still take two languages.
Mm-hmm.
But I took French and Spanish rather than Latin. Which was kind of funny because I would write excellent Spanish on my French test and vice versa.
Yeah, very close together.
The teacher would say, well, that's good French, but this is Spanish class and everything. I mean, language was not my forte, so that was one of those subjects. But the expectation was you either took 2 years of one language and 3 years of another language, mm-hmm. or you took 4 years of one language.
Okay.
That's changed. Now you need to take the equivalent of 3 years of one language and obstacles.
Well, I find the Latin that I took extremely valuable.
Well, people said that, but we were allowed to, so I said, eh, what the heck.
Well,
we don't have to take it, so I didn't want to take it, but yeah, typical teenager, I suppose.
Well, I didn't have a choice, but
right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
When did you graduate from Hotchkiss?
I graduated in 1973.
And where did you go to college?
When I graduated from Hotchkiss, I went to the U.S. Naval Academy, reporting July 5th, 1973. I lasted not quite 2 years. I left, I think, the first week in April of my second year, so I didn't finish 2 years. I just decided the military was not going to be for me. People yelling and screaming for no good reason. And you get in trouble because, you know, your facial expressions. I mean, the upper class would be saying something really stupid, and you kind of roll your eyes, and you get in trouble for
that.
You know, I got in trouble the first time. Now, when I was there, it was still all boys. No, excuse me, all men, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It went co-ed. Let's see, if I'd stayed at the academy as a senior, I think it would have been the first year they had women there at the academy. And I did not envy them, because the boys were going to show them, this is no place for girls, they can't take it, you know, that kind of nonsense.
Was there that kind of an attitude when the girls came to Hotchkiss?
I don't really know.
Okay.
I've heard yes and no.
Yeah, it depends on who you talk to.
Depends on who you talk to. I mean, some people said mean things about my father, saying, oh, he didn't want girls, other stuff. And of course, what he said to me, what mom said, no, he was fine.
Yeah,
but he wasn't going to be extra nice to them. He's like, if they did well in math, they would do fine.
Yeah, oh,
you
sure.
Know, he was not going to be...
He wasn't going to bend over backwards.
Right, he wasn't going to be too kind and gentle because they're girls. Which is nice.
That's not fair.
Right. Well, it's just silly.
Yeah.
I mean, the girls, I mean...
They've got just as good a brain as boys.
Teaching, you know, this nonsense about girls can't do math is really kind of funny. I mean, as a math teacher of over 40 years, trust me, I've had brilliant boys and I've had brilliant girls and...
And you've had everything in between.
And frankly, I prefer teaching the girls and coaching the girls because they're, for one, they're much more willing to listen. Boys tend to know everything. Even when they don't know it, they know it. They act.
That's an attitude.
They act exactly, and I guess that's sort of the way they're trained. I'm frustrated with girls because they're too quiet sometimes, and you know, they would say, "Well, 2 + 2 = 4," but I'm not quite sure. It's like, what do you mean you're not sure? You know, of course you're sure. You're right. So be confident. And, you know, it's fun to me to see.
It's fun to teach.
To get them to change their attitudes about themselves.
Yeah, that's always behavior modification.
Yes.
You wound up at Springfield College, didn't you?
Yeah, I went 2 years to the academy, more or less. I came home for 1 year and stayed home because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do at that point. And, you know, I was a third son, so it wasn't as though we had lots of money to spend for colleges and stuff. So I stayed home, did odd jobs. I went down to the old University of Connecticut at Torrington when it was still in business. Mm-hmm. Took a couple of courses and then decided I was going to try being a teacher. I guess like that, because that's what it turned out. So I ended up looking around and, you know, applied to about 4 places and got into all of them and said, okay, Springfield. Because I like sports. Again, as I said, I wasn't a great athlete, but I like sports. So that was interesting. It wasn't, in all honesty, after going to Hotchkiss and after going to the Naval Academy, the academics at Springfield was relatively simple.
That's
because... Cool. I did my homework. I was used to...
You were used to doing
homework. I was used to doing homework. I was used to studying. I mean, I still remember this.
Yeah, and that makes a difference.
I mean, we had this... They have a general Western civilization class that everybody takes.
Uh-huh.
Now, most people take it as a freshman.
Yeah.
But since I was a junior transfer, I still had to take it. And it was, again, this is long before computers. So it was in a class that was supposed to have a lecture of roughly 170 kids. Well, about 40 of us would show up on any given day.
Yeah.
And we would take notes, and those of us who wanted to take notes and everything. And it really was quite simple, and I still remember the exam. The exam at the end of the semester was very simple. I mean, meaning there were, I forget, 20 true false, 20 multiple choice, you know, 3 short answer essays. Mm-hmm. But what they did for that class is they gave us, if you will, 3 times the exam. So if there were going to be 20 multiple choice, they gave us a list of 60 multiple choice. But the 20 on the exam came from those 60.
Yeah.
And they gave us 12 essays, and the exam would take 4 of them.
So if you memorized everything, you were all set.
So 3 of us got together. 3 of us, I guess they call us nerds back then, got together, and we actually went through and found and looked up the answers to all the questions.
Yeah.
Ahead of time.
Piece of cake.
Now, the essay, you had to work on, you know, writing and everything, so
yeah,
we did
but
that.
Still.
But having done that, but the crazy thing is, there were actually kids who failed the exam. They hadn't gone to the lectures, you know, and they hadn't studied for it. Just, I don't know what they were thinking, but...
They weren't.
No, that's probably a good way of putting it. You know, they were freshmen, mm-hmm. and it's like, guys, you should study a little bit. And you know, sort of the 2 days before the exam, and people realized, oh, I don't know much, they came, can we... Get your notes. And I'm sorry. We did all the work. You know, you guys can do what we did.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, that sort of thing. No free lunch.
Yeah, I mean, I studied. When I was there, the normal course load was 4 or 5 classes. I was taking 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. It was really kind of funny because the first semester there was on the trimester. So the fall, I had a nice advisor. She was very nice, but I guess she didn't know what she was doing. So when I showed up, she said, well, here are the 5 classes you need to take. So I signed up for those 5 classes. Well, as it turns out, 4 of them I didn't need to take.
Oh, dear.
So after about 2 days of class, I realized that. So I went back to the register, and I got into 5 classes. Because I was only going to be there for 2 years. I had to get through.
A lot.
I had to take the Western Civ, of course, which mm-hmm. is a freshman class. I had to take freshman English, which is kind of crazy, but I did.
Yeah.
And then all my education courses and math courses. So eventually after that, I learned I took care of my own scheduling, and then she would just sign it. But for the second semester, because I was bored in the fall, mm-hmm. I actually was practicing with the boys' tennis team and the golf team, even though I couldn't play in matches or anything. I was practicing with them.
So, sure.
So that for the second semester, I wanted to sign up for extra classes, mm-hmm. an extra history class. Mm-hmm. I was going to take first aid, which looked like Springfield with coaches and you know phys ed teachers and
yep.
trainers and everything was a good course. And I had to go to my advisor. He said, oh, I'm not sure. This is too much. Oh, well, you can go speak to the dean of the mm-hmm. my major. And it was really kind of, I still remember he said, you know, this is going to cut into your social life because you're going to have to do extra work. And I'm kind of laughing, saying,
what social life?
Yeah. So?
Uh-huh.
You know, that really cares. So they gave me permission. Well, I got straight A's for the first time ever. I mean, in Hotchkiss, I was a B-minus student, which was...
Okay.
Nowadays at Hotchkiss, B minus would put you at the bottom of your class.
Yeah.
But back then, you know, B minus was average. I was in the, you know, the middle quartile,
okay.
whatever, which is fine. You know, that sort of thing. I mean, in fact, for freshman, you know, prep English with Bob Hawkins, which every prep took him, I got a D plus, and it's like, good job. Because D plus was average.
For him, yeah.
Yes, for average.
He, for him,
yes.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. So
when did you graduate from Springfield?
I graduated from Springfield in 78.
And you taught away for 8 years before
I
you came
went,
to Hotchkiss.
I taught for 2 years in Virginia, mm-hmm. in a private boarding school, all boys. 4 years in New Jersey at a co-ed private boarding school. And then 2 years in Hawaii at another co-ed private boarding school. You know, living in dorms, doing various... You know, teaching everything from, you know, Algebra 1. I think the first time I taught calculus was my 4th year of teaching or something like that. And everything in between.
And you have been at Hotchkiss continuously since
86. I'm about to start my 34th year teaching there. Yeah, 86, 87 was my first year of teaching there.
You are planning to retire in the spring?
My plan is to retire this June. This 1 year, so this will be my 34th and last year. That's the plan at the moment.
Bless you. That's wonderful.
Yes. So.
Now, you teach math, but what do you coach?
I have coached...
Everything.
I've coached a lot of different sports. Last year, I coached field hockey, thirds field hockey, freshman field hockey, JV squash, and then varsity girls golf.
What is squash?
Squash is an indoor sport. Mm-hmm. You're in a box with four walls, and you're allowed to play off of all walls. Now, if the ball bounces a second time on the floor, you lose the point. And there are some boundaries on the walls. You can't hit it above. There's certain along the wall. You can't hit above that. And then there's what's called a tin, which is literally usually made of tin, so that when you hit it,
you can hear it.
You hit this clang, so you know you hit it, and you lose a point. You lose the point there.
Is that? Is it a team sport or is it?
It's a team sport. It's like tennis or golf. It's a team sport. That for matches, it's seven members of one team against seven members of the other team. So the number one plays number one, number two plays number two, et cetera. Okay. And you need to win four or more of the seven to win the match.
Okay.
So it's, again, tennis. I coached tennis for many years, and it was the same thing. Now, tennis is a little bit different because you have singles and doubles.
Yeah, but tennis, I understand.
But it's a team sport, even though you're individually, me against you.
Yeah.
Against my opponent. And then I coached volleyball for 28 years, the varsity volleyball team.
All right. Over the 34 years, I'm sure you've seen lots of changes. Can you give me some examples of changes at Hotchkiss?
Changes at Hotchkiss?
Well, obviously. Other than the girls.
The girls. When I first showed up, there was girls there. There was boy there when I graduated, of course.
You told me something
even
about...
Well, 34 years ago, I still had the feeling it was still a boys' school with a whole lot of girls going.
Yes.
You know, there was still kind of that feel. Mm-hmm. Now, part of it came from the boys.
Sure.
You know, sports. I mean, when I went to Hoskins, when it was all boys, you played sports and you talked about sports because there were no girls around. Now, obviously, with girls around, there's a lot more socializing and things like that. But it's still sports. But in general, you know, way back when, when I first got there, the boys' sports, they took it more seriously, and in general it seemed to be taken more seriously. In terms of the outside world, like our boys' ice hockey team was serious and everything, and the girls' had a hockey team.
Yeah.
It was sort of a, well, we have to, you know, we can't, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Back then, I think we only had one team for girls' ice hockey. Now, of course, we have two. And I spent, when I first got there, for a number of years, I was actually coaching more girls' sports than guys' sports. The first year I got there, I did, doing club golf, but I helped with field hockey. Then I coached the varsity girls volleyball. And then I did boys' lacrosse. And that first year there, we had a teacher and his wife. And the wife... And I forget the details. I should have looked it up. But she was on the U.S. national lacrosse team, I believe.
Ah.
Considered one of the best lacrosse players in the world.
Okay.
And here she was at little old Hotchkiss in the middle of nowhere coaching the JV lacrosse team.
Okay.
Because the athletic director was coaching the varsity team. She also coached the girls' JV field hockey team. And she had been a national caliber field hockey player also. And so, the funny thing is, after 1 year, they left. You know, the husband-wife team left and everything. So, all of a sudden, I'm coaching the field hockey, and I'm coaching lacrosse.
Well, they had good preparation the year before.
Which is kind of fun. You've gone from one of the best players in the world, literally.
Yeah.
You know, and a good coach. I mean, she was great and everything. And all of a sudden, I'm doing it. And so, I figured it out. I mean, I had, at Springfield, one of the classes I had taken, the phys ed class, was coaching field hockey.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually knew something about field hockey.
Oh, that's good.
And then when I was in New Jersey, I actually volunteered to help with the JV field hockey team because the coach was a math teacher and was like, you know, I can help you with goalies or something. He said, sure, come on out. So I started helping them.
How has the trustees' attitude changed?
Well, my impression when I first got there was the trustees were a bunch of, to put it plainly, cigar-smoking, you know, rulers of the world. You know, they owned companies and they were rich and successful. And you know, they ran things. You know, they told people what to do, where to go, and their job was to come in and make sure Hotchkiss had money, and you know, that, like, if they were going to build a new dorm, they would have to okay that and mm-hmm. the budget. And I think the only thing officially they did with faculty was was their job to hire the head of school. But they didn't really get involved with the teaching and the coaching and dorm life. They sort of left that to the faculty.
Yeah.
But over time, that's changed, and now the trustees, which are much younger in general, I mean, mm-hmm. the average age, mm-hmm. and they're not all, you know, CEOs of, you know, big-time corporations and things like that, though we still have some. And they're much more interested and involved in, well, what do you teach? Why do you teach that? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you do in the dorm? Why do you do that? That sort of thing. So they're much
more engaged.
Much more engaged and involved. And so there's much more likely to have committees of faculty with trustees. You know, so they could learn about the school. You know, what's going on now.
It's more hands-on than it was before.
Much more hands-on, yes.
How about the curriculum? How has that changed? Yeah.
Well, the big thing in the curriculum is 10 years ago, I forget exactly when, since I teach math, we put in a humanities program, mm-hmm. which is a combination of English, history, philosophy, religion, and then arts. Now, arts can be drama, music, painting, photography, ceramics, so you had to pick one of those, but it was, and that... For the 9th and 10th graders, that they were very, very busy. Whereas for the 11th and 12th graders, they were taking, in general, 5 classes. Mm-hmm. English, math, you know, history, language, and science. Now, some people would, you know, I had an advisee who took 2 languages, took 2 AP languages, you know, but didn't take math her senior year. Which is unusual.
Yes,
because the college office really...
They want math.
They want math. I must admit that, you know, I knew her. Math was not her forte. She was a wonderful kid, et cetera, et cetera. Worked hard. And I just said, for your senior year, you've gotten through the requirement. You're ready for college. And I would hope some college would not say, well, we were going to take her, but she's not taking that. Well, instead, she was taking 2 AP languages. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as though she was taking the old saying, underwater backwards, which frankly sounds pretty difficult, but that's okay. And so, I mean, the nice thing, as far as I'm sure, kind of funny to say, is she bombed her first math test. And so that convinced her to sort of listen to me, so she dropped it, and the college office said, well... Now, she did very well. She got into an honors program in college, et cetera, which was perfect for her.
Good.
You know, so it worked out fine, and you know, but that has changed. We also the last number of years, I don't know how many years we go back, in terms of the computer is much more involved, of course. In fact, there's some teachers, English and history especially, every paper you write is entered on the computer, and then the teacher grades it on the computer and sends it back to you on the computer. You know, they have tablets where they can write on the tablet and do that sort of thing. It's a good thing I'm retiring, so they don't have to force me, but I'm still old-fashioned. I give them quizzes on paper.
Yeah.
You know, I collect it and grade it and I hand it back and things like that. Yeah. Now, one thing that's different now from when my father taught, because my father, old-fashioned, started in the 40s, what we used to call stand and deliver. Mm-hmm. You stand up, find a new lecture, and the kids take notes, and you ask them some questions, and then that's it. I never liked that from when I started teaching. Now, of course, I was a good boy. I did that for a number of years, for about 3 or 4 years, and I said, no, I don't want to do that anymore. So, I mean, I still gave lots of quizzes, but I started having kids do, you know, group work together. Because, frankly, if they're on their own and they're not very good students, you have to give them really easy problems, or they're just not going to get it.
I know.
And so I didn't like that. So I'd rather give them some tougher questions, and then let 3 of them work together.
And mix up the ability level?
Well, what I like to do is just say, you guys choose. But, you know, you have to make sure that it's not the 3 best students always together. You know, and there are kids where I have to say, no, you 2 can't work together. Because they're like twins. They may not be actually twins, they're completely separate families, but they might as well be twins. Yeah. They come in together. So, no, you guys can't work together. You got to go and work with someone else. And in the beginning,
it's a little tough.
It takes them a while to get used to because it's just different.
Sure.
They're not used to it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go up to the board. One of the things I have in my classroom over the years, they've got more and more, well, when I first got there, it was still blackboards,
yeah.
you know. And then eventually we covered those with whiteboards, which is a shame because there's still that slate where they just put glue on the slate and put, it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
And then with all this wonderful, beautiful slate. But I like whiteboards because of the colors. But it was only on a couple of walls. Now I've got them all the way around on all the walls. So I can get my whole class. I've had classes of 17 kids where everybody's up at the board working. You know, now you can't do that if you have 30.
Yeah.
But, you know, when the biggest class is 17, you can do things like that. And that's often usually where I start my class is either I put problems on the board from the homework, or I put some new problems they've never seen on the board, or they come in and say, okay, you guys pick which ones from last night's homework do you need? And they, so one kid would go up right number 12, and then someone else would do it.
Oh, okay.
But I make them do it, yeah. and you know, when they get stuck, it's like, no, don't ask me.
Yeah, you got help.
Ask your classmates and figure it out. And you know,
but it's a good lesson.
But it's good for, and then teamwork, and they realize, you know, obviously in the beginning, some kids are very quiet and shy, and I'm not good at math, and I can't do this. But, you know, they get to it, and they get to the point where, you know, I got it.
Yeah.
And it gives
a lot of self-esteem.
It's that light bulb moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's math. Math is one of those subjects. Some kids are just better than others.
Oh, sure.
It's like language. Some kid can learn a new language in 3 weeks, and people like myself can't learn a language in 3 years. But
yeah.
It's the same thing in math, of course.
How about the diversity? Has that changed?
When I was in high school, when it was all boys, it was very monochromatic, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Caucasians.
Yep.
You know, a lot of kids from, you know, Darien, New Canaan, Greenwich, New York City.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we did have kids from around the world and all over the country. But you know, since I've been at Hotchkiss, the school has worked hard, and I like it in terms of much more diverse. Now, some people say we're not taking students who are as bright as they used to be or as they could be. You know, we're not. You don't need an 800 SAT score to get into Hotchkiss. You know, you need to be a good kid who's willing
yeah.
to work hard and
yeah.
stuff like that. And I mean, we've had kids from places like, you know, Iran.
Yeah.
Where, you know, she comes over and I won't say it's funny, but this girl, she was wonderful. She was literally 5 feet tall or shorter.
Mm-hmm.
But basketball was her favorite sport. And she always claimed that she was one of the best basketball players in the country of Iran.
Well, they're short people.
Yeah, but it was more the fact that very few girls were allowed to play sports.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you had to play sports covered from head to toe and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when she came to Hotchkiss, you know, she wasn't that good, but she would play on our third team for several years, and she had a great time.
Yeah.
And she was wonderful. She would wear the, you know, the headscarf,
hajib,
and everything, which is fine.
Yeah.
No one cared.
No.
You know, and no one in school cared, which was wonderful, and I think that's one of the best things about Hotchkiss is, you know, you could be in, I mean, obviously it's different when you're doing history for English, or English rather than math, but to be able to sit down and have, you know, 5 different countries and 7 different states in the same class,
yeah.
and realize that, you know, you can have these discussions and you can both be right from your own point of view,
uh-huh.
but say very different things, you know, and that's good. And
that's how you learn.
You know, I like that. I mean, one of the things I've noticed at Hotchkiss versus other schools, if you go to a lot of schools, you go down the hallways, there'll be artwork on the walls, but by and large, most of them are behind glass. They're covered up and everything.
Not at Hotchkiss.
So we do, I mean, our kids don't go around putting mustaches on someone else's painting or something like that.
No.
You know, and it's gotten better. When I first got to Hotchkiss, you know, oh, you're in the play. Oh, okay. But it's changed over time that, you know, we have some amazing musicians, and the other kids, you know, the quote unquote dumb jocks, learn to appreciate how good their classmates are. And I can remember we had a girl, oh gosh, this might have been 10 years ago now, a new 10th grader, amazing violin player, just superb. In fact, she did college major in violin, etc. eventually, but you know, they have a concert, they have an orchestra,
mm-hmm.
and they had a Christmas concert. And she played this solo piece with the orchestra, which was just unbelievable. You know, 4,000 notes a minute, and that's just a minute.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, not a lot of kids went. You know, the kids, it's voluntary. And
that's a shame.
It's sad to me and everything. So I actually wrote to the head of the music department and the head of school saying, you know, we ought to make this a part of, we have all school meetings and we have lecture. I said, we should have an all school meeting and they should play this one piece so that our school can hear the orchestra and this girl play. Well, we ended up doing it.
Good.
And I can't tell you how many kids were just amazed. I can't believe how good she is. I can't believe how good she is. Yeah. A lot of kids don't like classical music, just like I hate hip-hop, but they understood her talent.
Yeah.
Or you have kids who are artists. Whoa, that's amazing.
And to have the talent appreciated.
Right.
That's the important thing.
So, I mean, again, in my time, when I first got to Hotchkiss, if you weren't a jock, you know, boy or girl, really good athlete, I won't say you weren't anybody, but you weren't that big a deal.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays, you know, we have so many talented kids and so many different things that it is appreciated.
That's good.
You know, which I think is terrific. And
how have the parents changed over the time?
Well, my father used to say, the old headmaster, George Van Sanford, way back when, would say, basically tell the parents, drop them off in September, you come back for 2 days in October, parents' weekend. Then we'll see you when they graduate.
That's about right.
Right. And we'll take care of them and trust us and we'll send them home and they'll be fine. But over time, when I first got to Hotchkiss, yes, there were parents. And, you know, you have a lot of kids from Southern Connecticut and New York City. There were parents who would come to all their games and, you know, things like that. But now, you know, there are a number of international parents who would buy or rent a house in the Lakeville, Salisbury, Sharon area and live here for a month at a time. You know, and so, you know, helicopter parents, they're more like living parents, practically.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I, as an advisor, and as an old-timer, I can get away with this. I've actually suggested to parents, you know, you got to let him or her do well on their own and have problems on their own. Because the parents, of course, parents want to fix everything. You know, and I understand that. It's my little boy or my little girl.
You can't fix everything.
But, you know, they want to try and say, no. And as an adult, I often want to do that too. I mean, I don't want to see people fail. I want to make sure they don't fail badly. But it's like, okay, you made a mistake. Let's fix it.
Yeah.
You know, you had a bad test in French. Not the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to study a little bit smarter, a little bit better, get some help before the next one. And that's okay.
Sure.
You know, some parents expect an A on every single thing in every single class. And some kids just, they crack under the pressure.
Oh, sure.
They really do. And it's sad because, you know,
it doesn't have to be
I
that
have
way.
To have an A. And
it doesn't work that way. That's not life.
No?
That's not life.
Yes, yes. But often it's the parents that are more of a problem than the kids. The kids are great. I mean, I've had kids who are wonderful, and I give them a B or something, and they're kind of like, oh, that's okay. And the parents are going, oh, my kid's not going to get into college. You gave him a B.
Yeah.
Like, no, trust me, they'll be fine.
I had the same thing with fourth grade.
Right.
So,
right. But again, for fourth grade, you're worried about fifth and sixth grade. Now these are kids. They're worried about college.
Yeah. I had them in fourth grade. Right. They were worried about college.
Or we get the kids who come in as ninth graders, and they already have a college counselor from home. So when I'm working with a kid about what courses you're going to take next year, yeah, I need to check with my parents and my college advisor at home. And I'm going, I've been at this for 35, 40 years. They're half a world away.
Yeah.
Who do you think is going to have a better idea?
Yeah.
But you have to do that diplomatically.
Oh, and yeah, I'm sure you do.
I try.
You wouldn't have been there as long as you have been if you hadn't been diplomatic.
Yes.
Anything that you'd like to add about Hotchkiss that I haven't asked you?
A couple things. I mean, one, back in the day, the school was faculty run, and what I mean by that, pretty much every decision that affected the school was voted on by the faculty.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I got there in the, you know, the late 80s, it was still pretty much that way. So even, I mean, if a kid wanted to take a long way, we had a boy even taking photography. He wanted permission to go to New Orleans, to Mardi Gras, to do a photo shoot for his class. And of course, some of us are going, huh?
Yeah.
But the faculty voted on that, you know.
And they let him go?
They let him go, yes. Because, you know, some of us old-timers, I mean, I was young at that time, but
yeah.
I thought as an old-timer, it's like, no, you came here. But nowadays, almost nothing is decided by the faculty anymore. It's the head of school, the deans, and then committees. So what will happen is that they want to change dress code, for instance, or something, or dorm rules. A committee gets together, the head of school okays it, and we get this email. Here are the new rules.
That doesn't always
sit well. And the one thing I don't like about that is there are some of us who have been there for a whole lot of years. And so when newer, younger faculty, important people, administrators, want to change things, there are times it's like, did you ever think about asking some of us old-timers?
Yeah. Because, experience.
Well, experience, like, no, we tried that 15 years ago.
And it didn't work
it
then.
It didn't work terribly well, and you're setting yourself, it's not going to work again. And it's times like that I really hate being right.
I don't like being,
I told you so.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. And
but experience counts.
It is frustrating that they really don't want to hear from some of us. I mean, partly because I'm always saying no. Well, because I've got a different point of view, and do we want to give the kids everything they want just because they want it?
That's not good.
I mean, like you know, the one that always gets me is like, okay, internet. The kids can't survive without the internet. They all have phones. I don't have an iPhone yet, but they have iPhones. And, you know, in the dorms, they have internet access. Well, we used to shut it off for underclass at, I think, 11 o'clock or something, so they couldn't do Wi-Fi after. Now, the rule are, for 9th and 10th graders, they're supposed to be in bed by 11.
Yep.
But of course, they kept complaining, I can't do this and that. So what do we do? Because they complain, we gave them more time. One, we complain they don't get enough sleep, because they don't.
They don't.
No, I mean, if you find a senior who says they go to bed before midnight every day, they're either funking out or they're lying to you.
Yeah.
Because no kid does that. No kid did. When I tell kids I made it through college, high school and college, Hodgkin's and college, and never pulled an all-nighter, they think, no, that's not possible. That's not possible.
I didn't do...
The first time I ever pulled all-nighters was when I started teaching, and we had exams, and I, you know, we'd have exams on Tuesday, all my grades and comments had to be done Thursday.
Yep.
There was no choice. I would stay up all night Tuesday and all day Wednesday, and then I would go turn it. I was always on time, never been late. But I would turn it in, you know, Thursday morning at 8 o'clock on the gym, and then I would go back and take a nap because I was sick. Because I wasn't used to working for 48 hours straight, but I had to.
Yeah.
But the kids are used to that. And it's like, oh, yeah, I got a lot of sleep last night. 5 hours.
Wow.
And that's a thing. So I don't like that. I mean, yeah, I'm not saying, you know, we're coddling the kids too much, but, you know, it's the kids' jobs to push the boundaries because they're teenagers.
And it's their job to
ask for more and more and more. But at some point, someone's got to say, no, sorry.
And mean it. And
hold them to it. Yes. Absolutely, hold them to it. I'm one of those crazy old guys that when I say something, the kids know that I actually mean it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go back on, well, what did I say? He's like, well, what am I going to do? Okay. You know, whereas there are teachers, they can talk in and out of things and stuff like that, and that's fine. All teachers, you know, different teachers have different styles, etc. I mean, I'm not as mean as my father. You know, I was Steve Ballmer was mean and tough and unfair and all that sort of stuff. But you know, if you were in trouble, yeah, he called you out on this.
Well, you should.
And I did too. You know, you hear, when I lived in the dorm, that's when you catch kids doing things you're not supposed to do, like drinking and stuff, because you're in the dorm with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I tell them, it's real simple. If I catch you, I'm going to turn you in. I have no choice. I will not. And yet,
don't negotiate.
So-and-so has caught people. We know that, and they didn't turn him in. I said, well,
that's not me.
One, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. That's inappropriate for them to do it, and I'm not going to do that. And, you know, even my advisees, I say, if you're in trouble for something, I'll support you however I can to get over it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to make excuses for you. You know, you cheated, you plagiarized on a paper or something. No. That's not going to, you're not going to. I mean, I'll say, okay, what are we going to do next? You know, how can we fix your relationship with the teacher who no longer trusts you anymore?
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. It's fun.